Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Blackwell Tribal Edition. Murray here with you today. I guess, Ganyara, this has been something we've been speaking about in terms of drug cartels infiltrating, possibly using Aboriginal sovereignty and all those other shenanigans going on. Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Blackwell Tribal Edition. Murray here with you today. We've got the all-star lineup with Bumi, Ganyara and Yirilim, and we'll be with you for the next hour or so. Talking about sovereignty here on Blackwell Tribal Edition. And, well, it's been an exciting time and, you know, every time we come to speak, the world has changed a little bit more and more and we are very excited to join you. Later on in the show, we'll have a pre-recorded interview with Professor Asmi Wood, who's from the ANU College of Law, talking about treaties. That was a really good interview, and we'd like to share that because I think the time is coming now where most nations are learning about a little bit more about sovereignty and what is required when treaties are expected in the future, in the near future, I guess. But anyway, we're going to be talking about a little bit about the security and settlement and all those types of things. And I guess, Ganyara, this has been something we've been speaking about in terms of drug cartels infiltrating, possibly using Aboriginal sovereignty and all those other shenanigans going on. But that's not just limited to illegal operations in terms of narcotics or banned substances, but also bad actors. So Australia, while it may have friends and frenemies, let's say, there may be moves using Aboriginal sovereignty to undermine Australia's sovereignty, even though it's yet to secure the true sovereignty with the Indigenous peoples here.
100%. Look, it's a serious matter. It's far more serious than what people can understand or comprehend, especially the Aboriginal people. You know, look, they've been hammered and bashed pretty hard, you know, for the last, you know, couple of hundred years. No argument about that. It's verging on genocide. It probably was genocide the way Paul Keating admitted to it. And yet nations like the Yidinji Nation are holding out the olive branch, you know, saying, look, we need to settle the past. How do we settle the past? We need to secure the future for everyone, not just our own people, but also for all the mums and dads that are here. You know, the mums and dads who went out and bought a house and have worked hard and, you know, they're spending the whole life doing this, the mums and dads of Australia. And for what? To realise that the house that they thought they bought is not theirs. We say, no, we don't want to take the house off the mums and dads. You know, remember when the native title stuff come in? They're going to own the farm, they're going to take your farm. No more, we're not going to do that. We don't want to do that. We're trying to settle the past. So to settle the past, you've got to accept the truth. The truth of the matter is it was verging on genocide. It was an act of settlement, not conquest. It was really, and they didn't do it properly. They didn't acquire sovereignty, or Australia didn't acquire sovereignty from the Aboriginal people, which meant the land really belongs to those people. So how do we resolve the future in a world of 8 billion people? You know, there's 8,000 million people in this world, and we've got to be seen through legal identities. We've got to be able to be seen legally, and Australia has, at this stage, has refused to see us and our true sovereign capacity of the nation, for a start, the sovereign capacity of the nation, and its people. And our people, you know, as in the Yidinji identity, are very important things to understand. Now, as you were talking about there, not so nice people are getting involved. They're starting to become using Indigenous sovereignty for their advantage. They're starting to use Indigenous sovereignty for monetary gain in the UN world. And that's a serious thing. You know, like you're talking about the drug cartels, the boats. Now, I'll tell people that over the last 12 months, the authorities have found three narco subs, three narco boats around the Solomon Islands. Now, these boats are completely empty. There's nothing in there in the way of drugs. However, one boat that they can track back to Ecuador, for example, would have had drugs on board and had come across the Pacific, and they're aiming at targets like Australia and New Zealand because they see Australia and New Zealand as the cash cow. They're seeing all this money sitting here, no real drug supply into the place, so they're bringing these boats across and coming in. Now, the distribution work, the network is another thing altogether, and this is where people may be utilising the Aboriginal sovereignty. Now, whenever I go to an Aboriginal community, they're all complaining about one thing, drugs. Drugs, drugs, drugs are just destroying the future generations, the young people. And it's a serious problem, not only for the communities, but for all the Aboriginal, all the Australian people as well. So they're all having been afflicted by the same thing, the drugs that are coming in, frying the minds of the young people. So we've got to take an active part and participate in this now as to alleviate this problem that's coming in. And Australia is very vulnerable because it doesn't have, it hasn't acquired sovereignty properly. So we're saying to all the Aboriginal mob, be very careful if you go down into all this other pseudo-law rubbish and make-believe gammon stuff. You know yourself, each mob, when I talk to the mob people, they know that their law is the true law. It's the only law that's been here that lets that nation be there. And this is the important part. And, you know, we've got to be very careful. We've got to be very careful in what we say and how we're legally seen so we don't destroy that sovereignty that can alleviate this problem.
I think the concern would be shared amongst intelligence communities around the world, let's say, knowing that there would be this traffic of activity that may be a threat to, let's say, the Commonwealth of Australia or anyone else, right? So the importance, I think we mentioned earlier in terms of last week or the last few paragraphs about Pine Gap, you can look at Tyndale you know, all these different Laverack barracks, for example, in Townsville. Australia's sovereignty is very, very thin in terms of the ability to self-defend. Okay, so let's look at the capacity, maybe 60,000 personnel. Sure, that's why the US and AUKUS things is quite strategic for Australia because it doesn't have a mighty, let's say, defence outlook. That's where the sovereignty of the tribes is really, really important because with that security and the blessing of the tribe, for example, that would give it greater longevity and security to go forth and act correctly and appropriately, I would say.
Well, not only if drugs are getting in, not only would they be bringing drugs in. Think about this. If they can get drugs over the border, illegally, of course, you know, where these narco boats are coming across, think about it. The distribution network might need protection. Oh, you mean running arms now? Running drugs, arms, whatever else may be, you know, that these cartels would consider fair, you know, fair enough to get over here and protect their interests, their financial interests, which is what it's all about. So they're going to run guns in. Think about that. Who's going to defend the country? What police force now could stand up to the military-grade drones and ordnance that could be flooding into Australia? Now, they're finding lots of boats on shores over in the west, but now they're finding boats over on the eastern side. Now, what else have they got on board in the way of military-grade drones, for example, that can carry ordnance? What police car can withstand that? Now, the police have to be very careful. They need to be monitoring all this stuff, and I'm starting to get a little bit of feedback that there may be stuff coming in that's not so welcome here. I really feel sorry for the Queensland coppers. I really feel sorry for them to have this sort of stuff that could possibly be getting in, and they got to go forward out there onto the coalface. Which police car could withstand a drone that could take out a military grade tank, armored vehicle?
Yeah, I think that's the something we've seen recently with the Ukraine-Russia conflict, the increase in capability of drone technology in, you know, with the intent to harm or maim or whatever it is, disrupt. I would say that this is why Queensland and a few others have outlawed certain gangs and things like that. But we also see that recently with the WA police confiscating, or the Australian Federal Police, I can't remember which one now, but those 400 firearms from, let's say, sovereign citizens or that was used. So you can see why, because Australia's capacity is limited, and you can see the concern, which is the Yidinji concern also. So if Australia and you're dingy, you're sharing that concern, let's say, then there has to be some sort of talking point. There has to be a coming of minds, and Australia will just have to recognise and acknowledge Yidinji's sovereignty, because if it doesn't, then it, in itself, it's destroying itself.
I can safely say that they're starting to understand the issue of sovereignty. I can say that 100% certain, that the issue of sovereignty is greatly on their minds, and they know that's the only mechanism that can save them. You know, like you were talking about Pine Gap, about Tyndall, you know, all these sort of the military bases. Consider that. Consider the issue. Does Australia have the right to issue the land title through the territory government for the likes of Pine Gap, for example? What did the Americans actually get in the way of security? The only people who can secure their position, secure the American position, are the Arrernte mob or that lot around there. You know, so they're the legal owners of the land. Australia didn't get the right to give it to the Americans, just like Diego Garcia base over in the Indian Ocean. The British didn't have the right to do what they'd done and give it to the Americans, you know, all this sort of stuff. So you've got to consider who had the right to do what. Now, we understand this stuff, which is why Australia is now aware of what we're talking about, that talk about security. Now, Yidinji is not big enough to have its own defence force. We have the ability to create an alliance, a military alliance, most definitely 100%. And that's our preferred status at this stage, is to create an alliance. Now, we need to create an alliance with who? Who would we really create an alliance with, you know? We could do it with North Korea if we want. We could do it with China if we want. However, Yidinji, being a very understanding people, and we understand where the Australians fit into this, poor buggers have worked all their life, we're sort of saying, okay, we'll give Australia the preferred, you know, our preferred status of to be the one to do a deal with. Australia know that. We've actually offered that to them many years ago, 8 years ago. Let's talk Turkey. I think it's getting now to the stage where they've got to talk Turkey because of this stuff that's coming over the border, you know, the drugs that are coming in. If there's drugs, there's armaments, there's guns, there's everything else. So this is where we've got to be very important to understand who are the correct people to speak for country. Who can and who can't? Now, I will say this. Indigenous Australians cannot speak for country. That sole privilege remains with the elders, the old people under tribal law that can speak for country, not gammon ones, not the Indigenous Australian. Now, I'm talking about identities, not the people, not the humans. I'm talking about the legal identity. And in our case, like where we're sitting right here now, there's one bloke that I can see right in front of me who can speak for country. He's the only one that I can see right now, here on this bit of ground, is the most senior lawman to speak for country.
Carl, now I'll bring you in, Bumi, and what Ganyara is saying is right, and I've heard you talk about this. Alcohol did a big damage to our mob, but now there's ice, there's all these other things that really are affecting people's brains and all those things. And that's something we don't want for our children.
See, like this drug, a lot of us smoke ice or drug. I had a beer and a wine. But this drug is so powerful that I see it along the street. People are walking around like Mickey Mouse. And there's a few cars smashed. I've seen this true drug. And they had a big thing on Sunday, I think, at Gordonvale Way or outside of Gordonvale, and there were about five ambulances and two police van. And this drug is nothing. It's a powerful thing. But you know, playing around with that. See, like in that time we go fishing in that. Now camping, you know, and but now this drug, right through our people, you know. And they can't, you can't really talk to them now. It's too far gone, you know. And it's a sad thing that, what it's doing to the people. And, you know, that now you can't really do anything, you know. You try talk or you try action, speak louder than your word, but It's a hard thing now. One day, I reckon, once you have one needle, you one hit, you go all the way. No turning back. And I feel sorry when kids come in a well. You know, I mean, what we take in, it comes out, you know, like all these things. And, oh, jolly. Yeah, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's really hard too is that obviously mob are very, very poor. And sometimes people turn to selling drugs as a means, selling it to their own mob. And that's where, you know, I don't hate them, but I don't like what they do. And it's just causing more problems and more problems. And that's a huge concern for any future nation, whether it's an Indigenous one or Australia or whoever it is. And just the damage alone, you can't quantify it, Ginyara. This is the thing now. But what is at the disposal of the nations is this sovereignty. And it's to use responsibly, because if the elders are the boss, but Australia has put them to the side a little bit too. They don't get scot-free of it. They're not the innocent ones here either. Queensland, Australia, they built this thing. And there's only one solution, and that's sovereignty.
You've got to understand the things like the opium wars. How could you conquer a nation, blood drugs into their country, let all the men destroy their brain? You know, like Uncle said, he's dead right. He's precisely right. They become a lost cause. You know, where do you draw the line? You know, where do you try and educate these people, especially when the drugs are affecting their mental capacity? And, you know, the Aboriginal people weren't stupid people. They could survive in some of the harshest country in the world. You know, you look at what they survived in and on and how they done it. And now you see a lot of them now flat out getting out of bed. They're flat out walking. Drugs have absolutely destroyed them. And this is the important part. They've used drugs as a weapon. So it was not only guns, not only shooting them. Oh, we'll give them some poison flour. We'll give them pox-ridden blankets. How about now we give them drugs? And that happened in China. When the opium wars there, they flooded opium in and destroyed the population. And they took over for a while, but now, you know, the Chinese woke up to that and said, okay, we're not going to use opium. Now it's flooding into America. There's fentanyl, this synthetic fentanyl. It's flooding into America, exactly the same thing, and it's destroying the population there. Now, it can destroy 300 million. What chance have the local Aboriginal people got when this stuff floods into here, destroys their mental capacity, and then Australia just step up and say, oh, no, we're the boss now? But it is Aboriginal sovereignty that is so important. We understand this, which is why we've got to unify and work together on this. You know, people have got to understand the sovereignty stuff, which is super important.
Yeah, they use religion to disempower our people. They force people off onto reserves. They flog them. They kill them. They stole their kids to try and disrupt the sovereignty. Then that they did, they also then let the alcohol get in. Now the drugs are getting in there. So whatever leadership or sovereignty is there, they're still trying to undermine it. And that's why this is really important now for all the people listening. There has to become a time where you're going to have to stand up. And if you don't stand up, then it's your children that are going to be falling down in the streets. It's your children and your grandchildren that are going to be walking around like a zombie, don't know what day it is. And unfortunately, for some people, that's now. So this is a very serious thing. When we talk about national security for the Yidinji Nation, this is part of it. It's not just about biochemicals and, you know, screwworm and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're serious things too. But the human mind is God's design, all right? And we have to respect that. And anything that comes along like this, these are serious challenges.
Now, let's go down another rabbit hole here. Land council. As much as people don't like me talking about land council, they hate me for that. I'm actually not allowed inside some of the land council buildings. I've got to sit out in the gutter like a real mole. But in saying that, Australia are using things like native title and land council, and you're connected to country. Your apical ancestors are here. Oh, that means you must be able to speak for country. Oh, you can sign off on these, you know, future acts. Oh, you can sign this because you're connected. No more. This is where they're now playing on the minds of your connection and not those who truly can speak for country, because inside Australia, if you've got any Aboriginal blood, you're connected to somewhere. Absolutely. But like in our case here, only certain people can speak for country under proper law. This is what Australia's starting to realise right now as we're talking about. They go through these PBCs, they go through native title, they go through land council to appoint, I would say, the native troopers to sell off the land for nothing. Not only do we have the very self-centred, greedy people who are running drugs into the missions, into the communities, not only do we have those to contend with, we've then got the likes of the Queensland and Australian native title stuff. If, say, a prime minister, say a political party wanted to win votes in Australia, if they wanted to get this next election over the line, what better way could they do it to get the 97% of people to vote the right way and say, we're going to do away with land council. We're going to do away with native title. We're going to ask each mob, where do you link to? Where's your proper connection? Where's your proper law? Like if we asked Uncle here, who speaks for country under Yidinji law, not Australian law, if we asked him, he'd say, I'm the one that can talk here. Up the table is another lot. Over there, that mob over there, you know, that one Yamaja, they got that way. Nudge and they can speak. These are the people that can speak for country. They know who speaks for where. We don't need native title. We don't need land council stuff. What we need is to re-empower the governments of these original nations, of which who can speak for country. They know who speaks for country where. We don't need $1 million anthropologist telling us. We've got to go and talk to the old people, say who speaks for where. And they know it. And this is what tribal law is all about. Go back to there. So we can get rid of, say Prime Minister Albanese wanted to win votes. He wanted to win the next election. He'd win it hands down if he said to all the Australians, we're going to do away with native title. We're going to do away with land council. We're going to do away with PBC because that's all Australian rubbish. We're going to go back and empower the original nations to give security to us and take them off all this rubbish, and they will do it for nothing. We don't need the money off them. We are the underwriters.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, these ones that are running Australia can't hunt with the hounds and run with the foxes. So the buck stops with them. All these problems, they made it. Not Yidinji, they did it. And it's on them and their children. So the only get-out clause they got is doing business the right way. And, yeah, you know, we forgive people too. That's our way, you know. Like we have to – because we all make mistakes and, you know, some made big ones too. But that's what the law's there for. And the year limit, it is a massive thing to see not only here but around the world that there are these real issues, not only with drugs and alcohol and banned substances, but also just easy downloadable movies, songs and stuff that are a lot more attractive than culture, for example. So people would rather watch a movie than go for a walk in the park or go and listen to someone talk about the olden times because it's not that interesting. They might not see the value in it. I'm not saying all the young people are like that. They're not, because they're curious. And when people realise they are human beings, that, you know, going for a swim and fishing and hunting is really good. But the world is going where everyone's on their phones, everyone's on a computer, and it's sort of distracting people from making that connection. And that's another battle that we're facing as well.
Yeah, of course it is. It's a huge battle. It's probably the greatest disease of our modern time is the love of ease, you know, the option to take the easy path, to do the easy thing. And you hit it on the head. It's, you know, it's one of the highest or greatest aspects of traditional education over the last, you know, 30,000 years in this continent has always been about connection and engagement. You know, the kids had that engagement through the connection, their family's connection to country, to each other. And, you know, a lot of the modern schools don't have that there anymore. You know, the teachers are struggling because of the workload they've given administratively to make connection with the kids. The kids are getting lost. They don't want to be in school. Even if they've got the option to be there, it's not a place that engages them or connects them. So, you know, what happens is that the kids end up not in school, not being engaged and finding other amusements. Like you said, it can be something as destructive as media, TVs, all that sort of thing, because even though they can be a teaching tool, they can also be a category that fits into the love of ease. And then on the worst end is the drugs, and that's the worst thing we don't want to see.
Yeah, and ultimately that affects the mind and affects identity. And that's what this is all about, really, Ganyara, in its true sense, is who am I? Who made me? What am I doing on this earth? And what am I doing? And who's the boss? And how can I help the mob or whoever, wherever I am?
See, it's the science of law. This is what most people don't understand, that they just cannot comprehend such an abstract thing as the science of law. You know, we all like to say, oh, I see that person over there, see that. No, they're not persons. Persons are the legal thing you carry in your pocket. That's how you're seen legally in a world in the Commonwealth of Australia. Like I keep saying on this show, you show me, you go outside and show me where the Commonwealth of Australia is. I want someone to go and point to me, where is Australia? Point to me.
Yeah, well, just there's another example. Give that you're talking about that. So describe an Aboriginal Australian.
Well, you said it in the last word, Australian. You're an Australian citizen. You are seen through an Aboriginal. You got connection to an Aboriginal nation, but you're seen as an Australian. You know, you talk about Australia. When you look at the legal definition of Australia inside its Acts Interpretation Act, for example, it's got Australia. Then it's got, this is the definition, when used in a geographical sense, it means the continent, its islands. But there's another sense to it. If it's used in one sense, which is geographically, it means the continent. But Australia, when used in the legal sense, means the Commonwealth of Australia, not the dirt outside.
Yeah, and that's also a foreign language system, a foreign titling system. So Yitti and Mullumbarra and Giyawibarra, these are the original names. Australia is nothing. That's Johnny Come Lately. So if you're using Johnny Come Lately paperwork and driver's license and everything in, bank account, and you're not using the original one, let's say Yidinji one, if you're using a Yidinji identity, Yidinji money, Binal, you're using Yidinji name, you're under Yidinji law. And the law here in this office is the paper world, because Yidinji didn't have that until recently. Everyone been using Captain Cook paper, toilet paper, this paper, you name it. So whereas the original one now is here. It's got that cassowary and rainbow serpent on it.
Well, let me ask Uncle here. Let me ask the old fella here. Old fella, can you go out and point out on the ground where Gimoy is? You know, can you go and point to me? If I said, can you go and point to a piece of Gimoy ground? You could walk out that door, true? You could say, right here.
Right here, yeah.
So you know.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And it's the substance stuff, eh? The proper stuff.
Yeah.
And we've got a proper human walking on the substance stuff, walking going, hey, this is your Gimoy. And look here, this is our tree. Oh, look, that's our cassowary. Oh, look, that's our fish. That belonged to the nation. So we've got one bloke here that can go out and say, see right here, I pointed, I can even touch the ground, I'll kick the dust, I can go and kick the sand on the beach and say, this is Yidinji, this is Gimoy. How? What's the difference between that and the Commonwealth of Australia? Commonwealth of Australia is a paper hangs on a wall where you participate in it legally, but it's not the dirt outside, because they're talking about a continental Australia. I'm talking, Uncle here, about Yidinji, where that soil?
Well, you know that Blackfella Creek, they changed it to Bunnagandaja now.
Bunnagandaja, yeah.
So if they're changing that, they got to change Cairns, they got to change this, 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 and this.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of name in Cairns that they got to take off too. Should be given a language name, you know. A lot of filthy name up, you know, and that's got to come right down, you know, and put our language there, which is the Yidinji land, see? Gimoy, you know. Change Gimoy. Change Cairns to Gimoy, you know. Red Lynch, but White Rock, Gordwell, you know. Wherever Yidinji is, we're going to put Yidinji language, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did that in India. In India, the English gave names there, like Bombay, mm-mm, Madras. But India have been changing the name back to Mumbai and Chennai and all the language name coming back.
Yeah.
So in a sense, that's what the government here is doing. It's already got the original name.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why when we're using descriptions, we use the Yidinji description on our pieces of paper. Giyawibarra. This is number 7, Giyawibarra Lane. city of Ghimoy, Ghimoy International Airport. All these things are being done on a digital titling system. And the Cairns High School is a really good example of that. Mm. And they got Boa.
Boa, yeah.
But they also got Ghimoy and Cairns High School there.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of two titling system, which Uluru Statement talks about, this coexisting sovereignty, Ganyara.
It absolutely does. It says, look, coexisting sovereignty, what it does say in the Uluru Statement is that the first sovereign nations were the Aboriginal nations. You mean like Yidinji? We're first sovereign nation here. And that they are the owners. That's why I said to Uncle, when you go outside, you can go and touch that dirt. Is that Australia you're touching, or is that Ghimoy, which is part of Yidinji? Is that Yidinji soil or Australia? And they said, in the Uluru Statement, they said, them Aboriginal people own that soil. That's their soil, not Australian soil, not belonging to Commonwealth Australia. That's why I asked Alvala here to say on air, he can go out and touch the real stuff, because Australia can't touch the real stuff, because that still belongs to them under their sovereignty. They're still here. It hadn't gone away.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break.
What's up, you mob? It's Miss Kinana, and you're listening to Bama Bibra Media. Oof, let's go. A black Britney Spears.
Well, a few years ago, the Yidinji government and its representatives, including the Bumi, Ganyara and myself, I don't think Yirilum was there, Darrigan was, and the former Chief Minister, Gujugudju. And we travelled to Nambra Territory down what Australians would describe as Canberra for a treaty workshop with the Birriggaba Nation. And the project was put together by Asmi Wood, who was from the ANU College of Law, and he's our guest on Black Law Tribal Edition. Asmi, welcome to the program. It's not your first time, I know that, and we love having you on. Talk about these workshops. There's a lot of talk about treaties. People often mention that, in whether it's the Uluru Statement or they're talking about sovereignty. But maybe people take them through what an actual treaty is, because a lot of people may not know what they want from a treaty, for example, which is why I guess this exercise took place in the first place. But talk a bit about that.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very grateful to you for your participation and you know, bringing other communities here to Ngambri Ngunnawal land, where the ANU is situated, to look at things which are absolutely vital to Aboriginal people moving forward. I think Uncle Michael Mansell said in 2003 how small communities, whatever that means, are much more true to the notions of their own people, whether you agree with them or not, than what he, I think, obliquely says are assimilated Aboriginals to some extent. So treaty is a legal agreement between two nations, nation to nation. If you remember Mr. John Howard, when he said we were all Australians, said you can't make a treaty between yourselves. But that's if you consider everybody Australian. Many Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people do not accept that characterization of their people. But as we found in our exercise, when you have two communities that assert their nationhood, that fits into the Montevideo Convention, which talks about permanent populations, knowing your borders, having a system of governance, having methods of dealing with people, you know, whether people call it citizenship or belonging. These terms don't matter, but you really live, breathe, and behave as if you were a nation, and you assert it. So in international law, assertion is important. Of course, it's not always easy when you're dealing with a very strong party on the other side, but nonetheless, you've done this for a long time, and I know you've done this for a very, very long time. So the idea of a treaty is that you have a people like Yidinji, and we have another group, Birriggaba, who probably haven't done this for as long as you have, if I'm not mistaken, but you've brought them along a long way. You've helped them. You know, there's a huge mutual respect between the two communities. you behave in the way we understand our ancestors to have behaved, with love, courtesy, kindness, mutual respect, all of these things which we want our people to project and to enjoy as well. So you have two sovereign nations entering into agreements between each other. Of course, there are some technical issues that go with it, which we covered on the first day, looking at, you know, how nations normally behave in this kind of situation. And, you know, you behave like two nations really entering into treaty with each other. There was no, there was nothing to say that you were not bona fide nations entering into faith, entering into treaty in good faith, considering the law, not ignoring law. And, you know, there was a meeting of minds on many things. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to go through all the provisions that we could have used. But the provisions that we did cover were done in an amazing way. I might remind you that the treaty negotiations went on to very late that night, you know, where you had a bit of dinner and continued to pore through the text and the concepts, as most nation states do. So you behaved in that way, which was really exciting to see.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. And what I loved about the exercise was that there were lawyers there. There were students, which was really great because they participated and got immersed into what we were doing. And I think that's really important to, when we're talking about spheres of law and different types of law. I mean, obviously, when you look, I'm walking down the road here at the college, and there's family law, there's criminal law, there's corporations law. But you know, where I see the ANU and some other institutions leading that space is Indigenous specific law. And not just as a side dish, let's say. And to be fair, I it was done in a culturally safe space, and that's a very important thing. And congratulations to the ANU for providing that space. So these spheres of law that we talk about is something that the students can consider and look at and see what is this. Because it's something that may come to surface in reality in the next few years, because everyone's talking about treaties, everyone's talking about, you know, what they want from the Commonwealth of Australia, for example, if that's the one they choose to treat it with. So I think it was very beneficial to all parties involved.
Yes, I think the culturally safe space was created by the two nations themselves. There was a lot of preparatory work that we did with you about what were your expectations, and we tried to do our best to accommodate as much as we could of those. In terms of the students, we had quite a few Aboriginal students and we also had some non-Aboriginal students and lawyers. So the benefit for the Aboriginal students is clear, that they can see this is really what our communities back home should be endeavouring to do. You know, one of the things that I think Uncle Michael had said is Western education is great, but a lot of our kids go there and become assimilated. So these kinds of programs help to pull them back from that coercive assimilation, because they see how elders behave, they see how elders treat each other with respect, and they see the fidelity and the and, you know, that deference to elders and things that we always talk about, but perhaps, I'm not saying you, but sometimes it's not always evident in our communities. So them seeing these things is fantastic, and they take it back, hopefully, to their own communities. For the non-Indigenous lawyers and students, the experience was amazing. I think one of the judges who I won't name, who was at the moot on the final day, he said if he had seen this process taking place, some of the cases that he decided in the past might have been decided quite differently. So this is a matter of education, not just for some people, but for all of us. I mean, I feel I learned so much from the process. And that was a common refrain. A lot of people said that they learned a lot. I remember, I can't remember how many years ago, talking to you about these issues, and when what you were doing seemed quite outside the box to, you know, if that doesn't sound too crude, of how, you know, you develop your own law, your own systems of governance, and exercise your self-determination. I think a lot of people, I think the first overhead that I put up was, first they laugh at you, then they join you, and then you defeat them. I mean, that was, I think, what Mahatma Gandhi said. And I think the arrogance of the strong sometimes is their downfall, and the humility and the fidelity of what they would call weak. I don't think you're weak by any stretch of the imagination, but that's how they perceive us. And the Uluru statement talks about the powerlessness of Aboriginal communities, which I didn't see in your communities, because your elders spoke strongly, powerfully, forcefully, politely, and, you know, with a great degree of integrity.
Yes, we would probably say that that powerless may be experienced by Indigenous Australians, as opposed to, obviously, the Yidinji Nation is moving forward, but there's a reality check there too. I mean, it's a difficult road, but, you know, it's one that if we don't do it, who else is going to do it for us? And I think that's where there's a real sense of amongst the, let's say, the legal community here at the ANU, a very big interest in how that shift in or closing that gulf of representation, or whatever you want to call it, or self-governance, for example, how will that be achieved, and what is the model? And you know, the written law is really good, because there are lots of examples on the type of models you can choose, and those international laws and standards are very important, because it's something that you can use like a tool, and hence they are instruments. But I like the fact that this is going to possibly lead to bigger and better things, and that there'll be a lot more acceptance around institutions, not only here but abroad, about that, looking at this unique window of seeing it from the Indigenous point of view, which you may not get, or you may get inside the Commonwealth of Australia. It depends on what you're looking at. But, you know, these the ability to create law and the grundnorms that the tribal societies have, now they have these tools that they can pick up and start to use. And we would say for the peace, order, and good governance of their community, their nation, their tribe, their mob, whatever. But also the important part that these things need to take place for true settlement or security of for all persons in the future. And that's a really big thing that we spoke of on the day of that that moot. And I think some of the students were really excited by that, because they could see that there needs to be this other interaction from this other party. We just can't be talking about X group and whatnot, but not talking to them. And as I often point out, that the Yidinji government is the voice for the Yidinji Nation, because it's created by the Yidinji Nation. It wasn't one that we had to ask permission for someone else to give it to us or whatnot. So, but I don't want to confuse those issues, but the importance now of legal experts like yourselves and practitioners working together in saying what would be the most appropriate model. How do you want to move forward as a group or a nation?
So the answer to that, because we believe in self-determined communities, is up to your community. As lawyers, we serve your community, not because we are Yidinji, but because we are brothers in a different kind of way. One of the most fascinating things I heard that came out of your negotiation between Yidinji and Birigaba was this. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People talk about minimum standards. And, you know, the settler colonial countries really pushed our people down in terms of what they could expect. But you didn't buy into that. You didn't buy into that. What you said was, you're going to set your own standards, which are moral, which are truthful, which are transparent, and going to set those as a minimum standard. Now, what this does for the whole group of Indigenous people around the world is to lift the whole ship. The ship rises with the tide, and what you're doing is lifting the tide. You're just pushing everybody up. This is not something that I've ever seen among Indigenous communities, because I think largely they feel beaten down. I didn't sense that either community of yours, but there was a kind of this is who we are. Yes, we have to, you know, interact with other people, but there are certain standards that we will not lower because we want to be true to ourselves. So this is an absolutely fascinating thing, because it really allows us as Indigenous people on this continent to raise the standards, something that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. And that was wonderful. We still have to do it. But if you know where you're going, you're likely to get there. If you don't know where you're going, I mean, you know, then you're going to sort of walk hither and thither. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, what Bumi said, you know, was really touching at the end there when we were debriefing, that we're not criminals. Like that's what it is. Like we're not criminals on our own territory, but we can see that the need to use the written law now to express to the world and describe to the world and codify what our values are, like you said, you know, and that's an important thing. Whereas possibly in years past, those standards or whether we agreed with them or not, they impacted on our lives. So it's really good that that these matters were put on the table for consideration. And I think that really gentle approach that you earlier mentioned by both nations there, it did have a huge impact on the students, for example. And when we were having dinner, they were talking about, you know, what would a better world be like? I mean, if the written law is there to create a better world, and how can that fundamentally be, let's say, become more real? Because, you know, there's injustices all over the place, and sometimes the written law doesn't provide a sense of true justice or truth, even, you know. These are versions of truth, and people will want some sort of ultimate truth, I guess. So I think that was an interesting exercise as well. What was some of the feedback from the students about being part of this exercise?
I think they found it absolutely fascinating. They said nothing they've learned at law school even remotely compares to this, which is true. You know, we only talk about one law. We don't really talk about plurality. We don't talk about Indigenous issues other than what the High Court has said about it. This is quite traumatic for our students. You know, it's not something that non-Indigenous people understand. But when they come to a space which is truly Indigenous, and we are attempting to use Indigenous norms without ignoring other people's norms. Nobody ever said, well, to hell with the rest of the world, we're not going to deal with them. Nobody ever said that. They said, well, we'll deal with them. And I think one of the examples that came out was what good faith might mean. You know, good faith is a beautiful word, but it's not always exercised in its spirit. I think the delegates on both sides wanted to define some of the qualities of good faith. And that is truthfulness, not misleading the other side, you know, acting with transparency. It's a whole lot of words that you know, you see from time to time in different cases, but not articulated in that one spot, in that one particular kind of way. So I know we didn't do this, but one of the things I hope that would come out is that we create a dictionary of terms for treaty and define these terms in the way, you know, the two communities have defined them. I think that would be, you know, and when we deal with other indigenous communities to say, this is what we hold good faith to mean. And, you know, we will not stoop to the kinds of behaviours that other nations have stooped to.
Yes, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. And we're broadcasting from the Ngambiri Ngunnawal Territory. And a big thank you to all those who give us their blessings to be here. And if you're listening inside the Commonwealth of Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Check your local station about who's broadcasting that. But we'll be back after the break.
Hello, my name is Andrew, and I'm from Arnhem Land. My band called Andrew Guru Band, and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
Okay, that's it for today's program. But before we go, we'll get a few comments from everyone. Bumi, there's some words for everyone listening, because you keep telling you got to come to the office and talk, and I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, come to my office, you're in the office, and we can sit and have a good yarn, you know, and we can click on what's good, you know. And we can sit and talk and talk about a lot of stuff and try to set you free a bit or whatever, you know. Yeah, so Uncle Zach Hulling, have a good day, you know.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And Yirrkala Mumma, might get you to say some things before we head off.
Yeah, no, always repeating the same thing. Yeah, the real strength and authority lives in the sovereignty of all the people, the original people of this continent. And Gingy is here to help anybody who wants to follow that pathway.
Kanyara, some final comments from you. Obviously, we talked a lot today, but the intelligence community must be listening and wondering what the hell's going on, and knowing that Yidinji is a friend of the international order or the court or system or whatever it is that we talk about.
Oh, very much so, because we understand what's going down in the world, and there's a lot of bad stuff going on at present. It's not very good, you know. There's so much propaganda and rubbish out there. We've got to work out what's best for our people first and foremost. We've got to work out what's best for the not only our people, then our land, our country. We've got to work out what's best for everyone else that's in our land and country after that. And that's the Australians. You know, poor mums and dads just don't know what they can do about all this stuff. But I'm very, very confident now that the intelligence world is listening very closely. They know what they've got to do. They know what can be done and what's got to be achieved, because if they don't do it, I don't think there's going to be a very nice world around to be here, because once again it was an act of settlement as to how Australia come here, not an act of conquest. Now, if the world goes pear-shaped and does start to get into an argument, that act of settlement may be destroyed, and that there may be an act of conquest then, where a lot of people are wiped out through military actions, where it would be, okay, now it's an act of conquest and we've now killed off all the people, we've killed off all the Aboriginal people, now we can take their law and we can be the boss. So we've got to do this properly. We don't want to see anyone harmed or injured out of this. And look, my beef's not with the...